But that is not to say that they are the only players there. You might be aware of Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and other VKontakte for Russia, for example, and other platforms. But there are a whole range of other social media content that we may actually fall that may fall under the social media and web 2.0 moniker. And these could be blogs, or they could be comments or discussions that you may find underneath, you know, a normal news article. So the web 1.0 the web 1.0 web pages, you know, the Washington Post, for example, or any of the original web pages, they decided to be social as well. So they've added comments on the bottom of the page. And these comments get uploaded, or they're encouraged for you to comment on web pages. And they, rather than creating something from scratch, they simply buy a software that does this for you. So there are services and their software out there that I, as a new business owner, let's say, can simply buy and create my own website, a social website. So they things like BuddyPress, PHP, BB, and vBulletin are software that you simply they're simply bought and resold to create forms. So let's say one day I wake up and I want to talk about cats was an example, and I want to create a cat form to talk to other cat-like-minded people. And rather than go to Facebook or Twitter, I want to make my own website. So I don't have much coding experience. I don't know how to make a social media website. I don't know how to make a forum. I'm just going to buy a software and then call it cats.com. And this is what these companies provide to you. They provide you the software that you can make a forum out of and then use it in the normal way. So with minimal coding and minimal infrastructure, I can create a forum and a mini or a social media website on a much smaller scale, but it's still a social media website with the normal comments, likes, shares, and media that you typically expect in a social media website. So like a social media forum like this would be very easy to make. You have a single user, you can create a conversation, and each person replies back to your conversation, and you can talk about different topics. Very, very simple. But the way it's done, how it's created and how it's stored differs to the Facebooks and the Twitters. So we have to be aware of this as well in order for us to collect this information in an accurate way. So how do I just want to say that although we have a Facebook that has 3 billion users or whatever it was, I don't know what the number is now, you have hundreds of thousands of these forums with hundreds of thousands of users and millions of posts. So they dwarf Facebook and they dwarf Twitter. And they might even be the majority of social media out there. So how do we do internet collections? So now that we know in a general sense that how a web 1.0 page looks like or how it's created, how it differs from a social media website, and we also have forums and comments on the website, how do we collect it? Because that's our ultimate aim. We want to create an offline copy of that data so that it cannot be deleted or removed from the website. So a common example is that Elon Musk Twitter poll. We want to preserve it as quickly as possible because Elon can delete that tweet at any point. And if it's gone, it might be gone forever. And how do we get it back? So similar from a website, if you have a website selling marijuana or some other illegal drug in your particular country, you want to preserve that evidence as quickly as possible because at any point, the owner of that website can delete it, can remove it, and can make it hidden from you by changing some settings. So we have to be quick and we have to be accurate. So what do we do? So the main thing that people do that I've seen is they take a screenshot. That screenshot or that Elon Musk tweet, if you read the news articles about it, they often contain a screenshot of that tweet as evidence, which is fine. for news articles, I guess, but it might not be really useful for investigations. The screenshot is just that. It is a picture of some content as a photograph or a static image. It is very, very easy to fake. It does not preserve any other information other than the content of that photograph. And if you have, let's say, thousands of, or 77 million followers to follow, you have to create 77 million images or screenshots, which is not very scalable. But just before I do that, I want to say that a screenshot is not accurate in its by itself, because it is very, very easy to fake, trivial to fake. So let me just give you an example of how that works, how I could fake some content on the web. So if I go here, and if you see my screen, I just went on the Guardian website, and this is today's site, today's webpage. The article is about the Supreme Court voted to overturn Roe versus Wade, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So if this is my evidence, I could take a screenshot, fine, but I would like to change this. So if I go click, right click, inspect, and I find where the title is put into HTML code. So Supreme Court voted to overturn Roe versus Wade abortion law. I change. I make a simple change. Oops. Let me just do it this way. As you can see, I've changed a single line, and it has appeared here in the content. I can just close this off, and I can see, I can take my screenshot, and it will appear that the Guardian headline was completely the opposite of what the true headline was. And this works with anything. If I can go to the Twitter poll in Twitter, and find Elon Musk's tweet, that where it says, should I sell 10% of my stake in Tesla? I can change it to say, should I not sell 10% of my stake in Tesla or something else? Take a screenshot of that and look very, very accurate. This looks like a Guardian website. This looks like a Guardian screenshot, but it is not accurate. So when we talk about, go back to my screen. So when we talk about screenshots, it is a good presentation material. It is not good for evidence gathering, and it's not good for, I certainly wouldn't use it as a single piece of evidence, because it's extremely easy to fake and not reliable at all. I've been always asked, well, should we not use screenshots? Well, you can, if you want to present it to the judge or to some other final affidavit, for example, or some other report, a screenshot is fine, but I would also have other evidence to actually rely on if I ever need to investigate the tweet. So in answer to the accuracy, what some investigators do is they do a screencast, much like I'm doing right now. Rather than doing a single screenshot of a single web page, they do a video. They start the video and say, hello, my name is Dan Mukherjee. I'm starting this video at, let's say, 12 p.m. on 5th of April or whatever the date is. And they would explain what they're trying to do. And they will record themselves going on to www.guardian.com, opening up that web page and opening up that single article. And that is much more difficult to fake, because you would have to fake a lot more things to get to that point and present that not, the Supreme Court didn't vote to overturn Roe versus Wade. It's much more accurate, but it still has problems. At the end of the day, you only have a video, .mov file or .avi, and that could be hours long. So let's say if you're investigating not just one page, but multiple pages, let's say you're looking at the tweet from Elon Musk, then you look at the replies to that tweet, Then you look at Kimball Musk's Facebook, and you look at Facebook's his message and his the replies. That could take hours of your recording time. And all of that is just a video. So how do you search it? Let's say you come back to it tomorrow. When did I look at that Facebook tweet in that video? Is it an hour ahead or 2 hours ahead? I can't search it. You certainly can't verify or hash the data, and you're not preserving the background information. You know, the HTML things I talked to you earlier, you're not preserving that information at all. All you're seeing is a video. It's slow, it's cumbersome, but some people do it and it works well. It certainly works well for small bespoke investigations. But if you're looking at multiple people, multiple web pages, multiple and large amounts of data, it can be, it doesn't scale very well. So what do we do then? You can save a web page. A save web page is available in all browsers. It's just Control S or File Save As, and you will create a copy of that web page stored on your computer. You can then turn off the internet, and that web page will still be there. It is a copy, offline copy for yourself, and it is available for everybody to do. And it's extremely easy to do, and takes all these elements, you know, the 70 or so elements from the journal, .ie website that I had earlier. It contains all those elements and stores them for yourself. So it is a very common way of doing it. It combines all the elements. You create basically an offline version of the web page, and you have all the HTML that you want to take a look at and analyze offline. You don't need to be online at all for this. The problem is that it doesn't take everything. So you might miss things. So if, for example, if you have a streaming video or a YouTube video, that is not saved because you're only saving the local elements. The streaming is found in a different website, and that's not collected. But the reason I say that the safe web page is useful is because you can create a script. not you, but the forensic investigators can create a script to collect multiple web pages at the same time or quickly. And services and software does exist, and they're very flexible, and they're used very frequently to do this. Software like wget, website get, or HTTrack can be used to download an entire website stored offline. So let's say you're looking at you're investigating a possible a counterfeit website. So you know those websites that mimic banks that try to fish for your information. They may exist only for a short period of time, but they exist. And they may have multiple pages. So rather than things file save as in every single one page, you create a script with wget, and the script goes and collects every web page on that website automatically and creates an offline copy of that website for yourself to investigate later. So that phishing website can be deleted, can be taken down, the person can think they got away with it, but you have a copy of the website and you can analyze it to your leisure. You have all the HTML links. You have all the content. And you might even get wget or the HTTrack website software to collect those streaming videos that I talked to you about, to go out of that website to collect YouTube and other things that are connected to that website. It's fairly technical to set up, but it is actually very useful and used quite frequently when you're investigating a full website rather than just a single web page, because you have this automation that you can use quite frequently. And also it's also very easy to use if you have a social media forum that you need to collect multiple pages from. So for example, in this case, in boards.ie, you have a single conversation that has 268 pages. So I can click on one and 268 times and click save as for all these if I want, but let me take a little time. But these wget softwares and screen scraping softwares can be tailored to get only those 26 or 268 and automatically copy them down for your analyzing later. It's aimed at scaling rather than simplicity. And it's very useful if you're having a large website to look into. It also is not applicable for every website, and a single software like wget or a script isn't applicable for everything, but it gives you a large, it gives you a huge, great tool for you to use to scale up investigations. But what about Facebook and Twitter and Instagram? They and other large social media sites have a data export feature. Because they're so big, because they have billions of users, because they have, there's only a few of them, they have been forced by regulatory bodies to be able to export data for each of their users in such a way that, well, the user can move to other social media sites if they so wish, but also for regulatory purposes and for investigations. Twitter, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, and all these other internet companies have a data export feature that is fairly robust and anybody can use. So if you're a Twitter, if you're a Twitter user, you can go to your settings and you can request Twitter to extract all the data that you've created, all the links you posted or tweets you've done, into a single archive for you to download. Same thing for Facebook. You can ask or request Facebook to give you a copy of all your posts, all your friends, listing of your friends, your comments, your pictures, even your applications you've added, even your links that you've added to between websites. It's all there. And the format that is given to you, kind of is up to them. Usually there is like a mini website. It's like an offline version of Facebook that you get in a zip file, and same with tweet, and same with Twitter. But in other companies, like for example, Discord, which is a fairly popular real-time chat application for, you know, the younger people and gamers, they give you an Excel spreadsheet. That's it. It's an Excel spreadsheet of all the comments you've made. Okay, it's not the prettiest thing to look at, but it does the job. So it really depends on the media provider or social media provider and how, to what extent they're willing to do to give you the data in a nice, usable way. I'm guessing Facebook and Twitter have been forced to make as simple as possible, while Discord just hasn't been on the radar just yet. But the problem is that not all large social media websites have these export features. A lot of them do because they're forced to do it, but a lot of them just don't because they're not on the regulatory body radar, or they just haven't had the chance to grow or expand those feature sets yet. But what we can do is use some forensic software and e-discovery software to download data that otherwise you might not be able to do. So software like X1 Discovery, you will talk about Ona and others. What they do is they use what are called APIs, which connect programmatically into the database of the social media website. So you might remember in the at the beginning of this conversation where I was talking about how social media websites store the data, I told you that they store documents in databases, like a single database. And this is what the software hooks into. It connects into the APIs and asks for a copy of a photograph, a copy of your name, your content, your comments, your links, whatever. The APIs are different and they're created by the social media website. There's a Facebook API, there's a Twitter API, there's a Reddit API. Each API might be different, but they all do the same thing. They'll allow different software to connect into the database and with proper authorization to get data out. So if you're looking at a commercial tool that's expensive, that is basically there for you to automate and to streamline your system in a more simple way, you may look at some of these companies like Magnet, Ona, and Page Freezer. I have no affiliation with any of these software, So the first few ways of extracting or collecting documents are all free, and they can be done by anybody with various levels of technique and experience. But these are commercial, and they are trying to streamline your collections and basically simplify things for you, but for a small, large fee. So X1 Discovery supports Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Magna Axiom supports similar things. And Ona does, again, other things. It collects from, let's say, Teams or Slack or other software that you might use for collaborations. All that comes out and is then analyzed and made searchable for you in a searchable interface. Like, this is the way X1 looks, and Ona does something similar. Or you can just export it out and review it in another format of your choosing. They're very flexible, but again, not free. So that's about 7 or 8 different ways of collecting data from internet and from social media. And they all have different positives and negatives. Which to use is the typical question that I get. And I have no single answer. So when I've gone to these conferences and webinars, and I've asked lawyers what they've done, a lot of the times they just say, well, we'll do the screenshot of a tweet or a Facebook post or an inflammatory post or a relevant post. And that's all the thing they relied on. Again, screenshots are great for presenting, but they're not good for analyzing, and they're not good for authenticity. So I would, use screenshots to present, but I'll also try to have something more robust to preserve the accuracy of the information, like the HTML behind, or prevent anybody from questioning that you've done any Photoshopping. So simplest answer is, how do I know that's not Photoshopped? And if you say, well, it wasn't, well, prove it. You can't really do that. So a screencast and screenshot combination is a very good combo. For those more technical investigations, where you're doing investigations of websites or large websites or large social media sites, you may be wanting to go to the more commercial route. If you don't have the technical expertise to set up your own scripts, they are, like I said, software that can automate things for you and collect data that are then presented for you and in a nice reviewable interface. But again, they're not free, and I would also just research them, make sure that they actually do what they want to do. So if you're investigating, for example, boards.ie, not every commercial tool supports that, or it was able to analyze that. So even if it's not free, even if you have to pay for it, you might not support what you wanted to do. Always just do a bit of research or consult somebody like us to give you a good pointer. They're great at what they do, and if they support a website like a Teams or Slack or Jira or Confluence, they do it really, really well. But you want to make sure that they support it before you start spending some money. So the takeaway is that it's not always easy to understand or to know what technique to use. I hope I've been able to convey a bit of information on how internet evidence is created in the first place, and how it's stored, and how evidence differs between social media and the original way that the internet was used for consumption. But the main aim here is for us to preserve the authenticity of the document, of the information. We do that as a matter of course when you're doing computer forensics or mobile phones. Well, the internet is slightly different. It's a large subject, and it is not possible to go over everything in this 45 minutes or an hour of this presentation. But I'm trying to convey that the main ways of what we're trying to preserve and what main tenets we're trying to follow. We're trying to preserve the readability, reviewability of document, but also the scalability. If you're only looking at a single tweet, it's very easy just to do a screencast and a screenshot. Great, no problem, you're done. But if you're looking at hundreds of people communicating over Discord and Reddit and Twitter to organize, let's say, a protest or some other possibly illegal action, it might not be very simple just to do that screencast. A good example of that was last year when there was some possible stock manipulation in regards to AMC and some other GameStop shares, where social media users all decided to come together and decided to pump up the value of a share so they can profit from it. Possibly legal, possibly not, but there are hundreds of these users, and you maybe want to preserve their tweets or their comments for analysis. You won't be able to do that with a single screenshot or single screencast. It has to be a lot more involved in that. And we didn't also talk about retrieving deleted information from this net. Although it's possible and very frequent that the data is deleted from the internet or just taken off. You might see that quite often on Twitter, where a politician would tweet something and they're presented with some controversial fact or some or they're challenged on a fact that they're asserting, and they simply delete the tweet. Well, where has that gone? Can we get it back? Possibly. It's maybe a topic for another time. But similar in a similar way, like what I talked to you earlier about a website that was used for counterfeiting or phishing for your bank details, they come and go very quickly. So how can we retrieve them if at all possible? There are services that do that, but we just didn't have this time or scope to do it here. But I hope that as you begin to understand how the internet is created and how it works and the various points or various ways of collecting that information, becomes a bit more clear to you on how you can talk to your forensic provider on the best ways forward. Because this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to bridge the gap of a legal person or a solicitor or a lawyer, a judge, to talk to the technical people who are actually doing these things to understand the various pros and cons of different techniques and to come to an understanding that we're all happy with. And in that case, I'm happy always to answer questions myself. If you have anything that you want to ask, please feel free to contact me at this website, or email address, and I'll make sure to answer them as quickly as possible. Thank you very much.